Next we have the first issue is, and are there any opening comments from the Judge Earl or any of the members before we go into our items? All right, very good. So the first issue will be the court interpreter's allocation. Will be presented by Judge Good. We do have Donna Hershkowitz here from the ad hoc committee, and this again is a follow-up from our assignment from the Judicial Council after work from the ad hoc interpreter's committee.
Thank you, Zlatko. The material for this is found on page, beginning of page 44. It's a fairly small item. Judicial Council directed this committee to make recommendations with respect to how to divide up $12,924,795 of unused savings of Program 4545 money for interpreters in a way that would result in the complete exhaustion of that $12.9 million by the end of fiscal 2014-2015. As the report explains, we don't have a great deal of data that would enable us to predict exactly how much money would be required for courts to fund the use of that money as contemplated by the Judicial Council. We did look at the data that we did have available to us, and we determined that we should divide the money in a way that each court is eligible to receive in reimbursement from that $12.9 million, a percentage equal to the average percentage of Program 4545 reimbursements that were received over the last 5 years. That seems to be a more stable, better average than using a shorter period of time, and is the best information that we could find to make this sort of projection. We also had a couple of other recommendations to go along with that. One is that we should track the rate at which these unused savings are being drawn down, and this committee should review that once a quarter, because part of our charge was to make sure that the money was exhausted by the end of next fiscal year. There was also a concern that the currently mandated services, interpreter services, might overrun the amount of money available. So what we recommend is that if the requests for reimbursement for mandated case types and domestic violence matters exceed the amount of money that's in the fund, that the unused savings first be allocated to cover that overrun so that courts are not left with a shortfall on their interpreter services. If that occurs, then a like amount of money should be withheld in the next fiscal year, 2014-15, to cover any possible overrun as well. And once you've withheld that money, then you will put out a chart that says what the reimbursable amount is for each court less that amount of money. We also recommend that the AOC staff seek the necessary expenditure authority to permit this to be done. And we recommend that these expenditures be tracked separately so that we start gathering data on how much we're spending on providing interpreters to indigent parties in civil cases. That, in a nutshell, is the recommendation. The full recommendation is on page 48. And I'd be happy to answer questions, or Donna, better yet, can answer questions.
Are there any questions for Judge Good or Donna regarding the discussion? Judge Walsh?
May I ask, presumably the usage of interpreters is not driven by filing, so using the WAFM data wouldn't be reliable?
That was our guess. If you look at the WAFM data, which is the far right-hand side of the chart that we have on page 49, it seemed quite different from the average usage over the last year, 3 years, 5 years. And we thought that there's nothing in Waltham that necessarily reflected the usage of interpreters because it didn't necessarily indicate what the English-speaking population was in a county.
Right.
So we thought that the better proxy right now is just to keep reimbursing in the proportions we've done over on the average over the last 5 years.
But it's, so it seems to me what drives interpreters is more demographic data
right.
than filings. That would be my assumption.
That's
but
right.
And those demographics can change. So I mean, how quickly would this change? If you use a five-year average, that may not be capturing current demographic data. Is it going to be updated regularly, or is this a one-time?
Well, that's why we suggest tracking these things.
Uh-huh.
We suggest tracking the usage for indigent persons in civil cases separately so we can just start seeing how that tracks. We don't have those data right now. But if we start tracking the data and we review this quarterly, then if something dramatic pops up, we could always consider a further recommendation. But right now, the best proxy we have on the need for interpreter services is the use of interpreter services over the last 5 years. Those numbers don't jump around all that much from 5 years to 3 years to 1 year, but the five-year data seem to smooth things out and provide a more secure source of reimbursement to most courts. And that's why we chose that.
And Judge Walsh, this isn't a long-term formula. the formula contemplates, as Judge Good mentioned, contemplates the expenditure, the complete exhaustion of these funds by the end of fiscal year 14-15. So if we were looking longer term, certainly I think the question of whether or not the demographics are going to change significantly in a way that's going to impact the allocation would be an important thing to look at. But for a plan that would exhaust by 14-15, I think this will help us get the data that we'll need for future allocations when we're successful in getting additional money for interpreters.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not clear to me. Are we just supposed to identify those who are indigent that we provide interpreters for, or is it limited to providing spending this money on interpreters for indigent people?
So for the civil cases, what the Judicial Council action was about was expanding the use of interpreter services to cases that you haven't been currently providing interpreters in. It was looking at one of the the determination was that we had the legal authority to do was to provide interpreters in civil cases where the parties are indigent. So to the extent that you, so this, the use of the surplus money is intended to cover that expansion of the interpreter services that you hadn't previously been providing.
Well because not all people that we need to provide interpreters for are necessarily indigent. So are we just, and I see in your recommendation number four, we're supposed to be able to be tracking, but we can spend the money for interpreters in case types that we don't currently provide interpreters for, irrespective of whether they qualified for a fee waiver
so
or not?
The funding for domestic violence, for ancillary family law matters, for elder abuse matters, that is not limited to indigency. We are currently pursuing legislation to allow the courts to provide at their own expense interpreters in civil cases where the parties are not indigent. The legal analysis is that we don't have the authority now under the current statutes to provide interpreters at our cost in cases where the parties are not indigent.
And Mike, if you look on page 45, we want to be careful as to what our charge was for this committee versus what the Judicial Council has decided separately. Paragraph 2 of the Judicial Council's resolution describes what this is to be used for. We are not charged with second-guessing that. We're just charged with providing a recommendation for how to divide the money among the 58 courts. So we limited our work to doing that after having a lively discussion about things that we were not to discuss.
Got you. I just wasn't clear to me, but now I understand that. Yes. Indigent and civil is
a
requirement. Okay.
So,
Judge Clay.
So, Barry, to the extent that some counties don't expand their services, And at the end of the day, you have counties which have, you have this five-year average where you set up maybe the reimbursement. At the end of the day, if these certain counties haven't expanded, and these other counties, because of the expanded services, have exceeded their allocation based upon the formula, there's money left over. Will there be reassessment to maybe reimburse those counties where other people haven't done what is part of the charge?
We recommend tracking this information and having it brought back here quarterly to see the rate at which it's being drawn down. And we'll see if there is an issue such as you identified, Don. We thought about that. But rather than try to anticipate a problem, we thought we'll just watch the information. And then if there's a need to do something, we can revisit that later.
Judge Soto.
Yeah. Judge Good, was there any discussion of the possibility of reimbursing for training and equipment costs for the interpreters as well as the direct costs? Or is that outside of the allowable?
That was beyond our charge.
Because if we get new interpreters in, we are going to have training expenses, and the equipment's quite expensive too in multi-defendant cases.
Donna might be able to address what the reimbursement program allows and what it doesn't.
Thanks, Judge Good. So certainly there was, when you are looking at the funding in Program 4545 itself, there are some very specific limitations on what the money can be used for. And the language of the Budget Act, and I don't have it in front of me, but says something about the that the Program 4545 monies can be spent on services provided by certified and registered court interpreters in court proceedings and outside of the courtroom. So there's some limitations. Certainly when the money has moved outside of Program 45, as the unspent surplus, the unspent savings has, it's no longer subject to those limitations. There is some greater flexibility on what the money could be used for. But what the ad hoc committee considered and what was ultimately recommended to the council is that we are providing the service for expansion of interpreters into these civil case types and not expenditures on the equipment or the training of the interpreters. It's certainly something that I think can and should be considered in the future. When there's additional court interpreter dollars that we are seeking to be able to provide this greater expansion. Certainly folks recognize that there is a need to be able to purchase the equipment and to provide training, and so that's something that could be considered for the future.
David.
I'm very supportive of the concept of providing interpreters for the pool of cases and matters that have been identified. But the underlying concern that I have is one of availability. And I know that we're going to be capturing information of the frequency in which an interpreter is provided, cost. Is any aspect of that data collection effort going to include occasions where an interpreter was sought but not scheduled because of a lack of availability? Because I think that's very important to recognize if there's additional consideration to continue the program, expand the program, what have you.
So I think that there are going to be several data collection efforts that are going on simultaneously. One has to do with what Judge Good talked about that's in this report that talks about the expenditures on court interpreters. Simultaneously, we've got the 2015 language use, I always get this backwards, language need and interpreter use study going on where we've partnered with the National Center for State Courts to look at use and need in the courts. I think that's the place where you will be seeing that issue come up, where there's a need for interpreters, but they're not being able to be provided because you don't have the resources available.
So I support the work that's been done here and the overall message that we need to, that it's essential to justice to increase access to interpreters. My concern from a macro level is that message needs to be aligned with our overall branch message. that to expand services in an open-ended way in one essential area, while we're literally closing courtroom doors and courthouse doors in other areas and continuing to reduce staff and services in other areas, can be a very mixed message. So I'm wary of that and believe that what we do here needs to be aligned with the overall message that essential justice is being lost now because we don't have essential funding, and that this is a piece of that too. So that's sort of from the macro level. Now, regionally, I think we need to be consistent here, and I appreciate the recommendations. Also, at an appropriate time, I think it's worthwhile to consider a motion to amend the funding to keep the funds at a state level as reimbursements, since that's what it really is, and to allocate the funds to the regions. So I'd put that forward at an appropriate time as well.
I see Judge Slough and then Kimberly.
So I guess what I understand you saying is that you think that the method of allocating should be different. So if you use it, you in essence submit a bill and get reimbursed. Is that what I hear?
That's it, and I think we need to be consistent region to region, and the overall message needs to be incremental growth here in focus areas or where it's most essential, but that we don't have funding to do everything.
I think that's really important because I think the consistency throughout the state is, for the reasons that Mr. Fitton expressed, is really critical. But also, we don't want to get ourselves out ahead and spend money not really having an idea of how much we really need. I think it allows us also to better track what our overall need will be, as opposed to going out globally, but take very small, reasoned, reasonable steps statewide, and as you suggest, submit for a bill for reimbursement. And again, it helps us track what our actual need is so that we can make the appropriate ask, demonstrate the actual need, and then apply the money appropriately and grow so that eventually all case types hopefully will have that type of service.
Kimberly.
And I know this is not really with regard to the tracking necessarily. It backs up just a little bit, but for clarification, the recommendation that was adopted, number four, creating the forms, it indicates here that the form will include space for the parties to request the interpreter and that it will advise parties that interpreters are available in civil cases only. Does that mean that it will be required? I mean, locally, I thought we still had the decision to, as to which case types, which particular counters we were going to be able to provide that. Does this then take that discretion away? Are we required?
So I unfortunately was unable to attend the Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee meeting where they discussed the form, but I know what they were looking at was an optional form.
Judge Good.
Let me say a couple of things. First, I don't disagree with what John or Judge Slough say with respect to the larger questions of equities and trial court funding. The question, though, is what's before this committee at this time. And we had a jolly call on which we discussed the larger issues before we discussed that our task is really confined here to making a small recommendation as to how this should be reimbursed. This is a reimbursement program. We are recommending the amounts up to which the courts may be reimbursed. So we're not changing the nature of the program from reimbursement to grant funding. It's all reimbursement. But the question of on what this should be spent has been decided by the Judicial Council to the extent that it has acted so far. They didn't ask us to decide on what it should be spent. They asked us how to whack the money up. And they asked us for a recommendation on the maximum account each court will be eligible to receive, not each region, but each court. Now, if all the courts in the region want to aggregate for some particular purpose, and there are some purposes expressed that might make some sense, that's something that could be done. But we were directed to provide a recommendation as to each court, and that's what we've done. So, we had a conference call in which we vetted all of these larger issues, before it became clear none of that was before us. That's to be decided somewhere else. So I just have a small recommendation I bring you on behalf of our subcommittee, which chastened, limited its recommendation to what's before you.
And let me add that we've reached kind of that confluence, I think, where our charge is fairly clear, but there has been some healthy discussion about how best to implement expansion of services among your group. And given our charge, I think it might be appropriate, perhaps, that we refer this to SEAC and ask SEAC that if this is an issue regarding the how to implement the expansion of services, that group perhaps have that discussion and determine whether or not it's an appropriate discussion to take back to the council, because it's a policy decision that really is outside the scope of the budget committee. But perhaps if the SEAC chair might entertain having this discussion, I will, if you all are comfortable with that, I think we can just perhaps have that informal discussion. And since we have the SEAC chair here on our committee, maybe he'd be willing to take that.
Yeah, and we've had some conversations in that regard. We certainly could take a look at this and provide some recommendations in terms of moving forward. And you're absolutely right. Trying to put this proposal into play can be a little bit complicated, and having the opportunity to discuss some of those complexities would be helpful to present.
Yeah, Judge Walsh and then Judge Wesley.
And certainly the chair of TCPJAC doesn't object to SEAC weighing in on this and us not. But I'm totally in favor of expanding interpreter services to indigent civil. I think it's been a failure for a long time. But I'm sympathetic to what John said about, are we just focusing on one area of need and not seeing it in the bigger picture? And perhaps SEAC can weigh in on this. But I want to get back to a process issue. Judge Good just said something about, well, we had our direction, so we were kind of limited in what we would do. I sit on the Judicial Council. I read all the binders thoroughly. We all weigh in. We try our best. But we're not perfect. We don't not always know all the answers. And I'm wondering, is there anything wrong when an issue like this is sent back to the Budget Advisory or off to a subcommittee? If the subcommittee says, Judicial Council, maybe you didn't consider this. Could you, within the parameters of what you sent us, here's our recommendation. But perhaps you might want to revisit this and such. I don't think anybody in the Judicial Council is going to think that's too cheeky. I think they would almost expect that of a group that had the chance to weigh into this, to really get down in the weeds. I think they're counting on you to do that. So correct me if I'm wrong, but it might make sense that, okay, within the parameters, here's our recommendation. But if we had a little more elbow room on number 3 or 4 here, we might suggest the following. Now, maybe that goose up time frames and et cetera, but could those who know more about Judicial Council politics help me here and say, would that be untoward, or is that something this body could do?
Well, from my time on the council, I will tell you that it wasn't unusual if we were looking at an issue for the staff to say, but you should consider this. It might be something that would affect your decision. Whether it was in the purview of what we were looking at or not, it wasn't unusual for them to bring it to our attention so we can make a better decision. And Jody, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that happens quite regularly. If there's something that needs to be discussed by the council.
Yeah, and you want the council to make informed, good informed decisions, and that's the only way that they can do that.
Let me say this. There is a need to figure out how to get this money out there. That's what our committee is recommending, the proportions in which to get this money out there. What there is a different question. That's one that we spend much of time discussing, because there are very serious questions about, should this be done regionally or should it be done court by court? Should it be done for specific case types only, or should courts have flexibility to do it for different case types? All of those are very interesting and important questions. I have no doubt about that. But it struck us that that's a different question than the one we were being asked, which is to figure out now that it is almost April of the end of the fiscal year, how to get this money out there in the next fiscal year. We wanted to get that decision made so we know how much money is available generally for reimbursement. I don't think our decision would change if, for example, we decided to aggregate it by region. I think we'd still use the same data and aggregate the money by region. We didn't wrestle to the ground the question of whether this has to be done on a regional basis because of bargaining units. We didn't wrestle to the ground whether or not one should consider having uniform case types being the priority across the state. And that would take a lengthier discussion than we had. I can imagine issues going both ways on that. So I don't mind there being a further conversation at all because there are very, very important questions here. But I don't think it should get in the way of our making the recommendation we've been asked to make, which is this is the proportion in which we think this money ought to be available for reimbursement. And those other questions, if SEAC's the right place for it, let's start the conversation there. But we did surface a lot of interesting questions. They would just, you know, prevent us from doing what needs to be done by the end of this fiscal year.
Judge Wesley, Judge Slough, and then Kurt.
I was trying to follow the stream here so that I know where we're at. Was that a motion you made or a suggestion? If it's a motion that you made to refer it to SEAC, then I would second that motion. I was trying to figure out if that's where we were.
Let me just ask a question. Also, I'm thinking of logistics. Our recommendation will go to the council. The budget recommendation on the formula or the methodology will go to the council in April. I don't know that this body can get back together before then to hash this out, and I was also thinking that SEAC might be the appropriate place to have that discussion, and I believe you have an upcoming meeting. So logistically speaking, could you address this in a timely fashion to get this to the April meeting?
You're right. We have a meeting next week. This item is on the agenda that's going to be distributed. There is a complexity, though. We can make a recommendation, but within that recommendation, the complexity involves a step that may prolong the time in which the monies can be expended. And that complexity is the necessity to meet and confer with the union. And that is not something that happens quickly and may require a recommendation to extend the time frame to spend that money, as perhaps distasteful as that may be. But that's a reality that we have to be sensitive to.
Can I ask Donna or Judge Good when the council would begin allocating money on the formula that's approved?
The idea is that this money is available immediately. So for example, if there have been any expenditures on domestic violence or ancillary family law matters or elder abuse matters over and above the amount that you were going to get a grant for in the current fiscal year, that is all reimbursable this fiscal year, out of the $92 million and out of the surplus if we exceed the $92 million. If courts were providing interpreters this year, in civil matters to indigent parties, that is all reimbursable this year. The council made that clear, that this was retroactive for the 13-14 fiscal year. There was some expectation that there would be some funding, that there would be some courts that had provided these services in some cases in fiscal year 13-14. Certainly there's an understanding that to provide it on more than an incidental basis, courts would need to look at their MOUs and determine if they need to engage in collective bargaining to expand to civil cases on a regular basis.
And I think I'm right about this. Tell me if I'm wrong, Donna, but since this is a reimbursement program, if there are operational difficulties, such as bargaining, that delay the implementation, the full implementation of this program, then that will mean that there are not requests for reimbursement for that part of the program. So necessarily, if there are operational issues that have to be dealt with before this money can be drawn down, those will have to be dealt with. And if those are issues that would require or should require going back to the council for refinement, I think that's the proper thing to do. But I think what we want to do is we want to say this is the proportion in which the money is available. That's our recommendation. And the issues that we surface, some of them are operational, and some of them are more philosophical than operational. But those are all up for grabs, I think. But not here and now. I think your idea to commit this to SEAC in the first instance is not a bad one at all. And we have perhaps it'll be laid before the presiding judges at some point, too, to see how they feel about it. But I think we do need to figure out the proportion in which the money is going to be available to courts, and then the difficulties of actually spending it will have to be dealt with.
Judge Wesley, let me get back to you in just a minute on your question after I hear from
okay.
a few other people. I see Judge Slam.
No, I just agree. I think it should go to SEAC. I just worry that if we don't, I think that Judicial Council would expect us to bring these types of issues to them. That's what this body is for, is to evaluate the budget issues. I get concerned about blowing a hole in a budget, which the Southern California counties alone could do with applying it to civil with no real measurement of how much money is needed. I also get concerned that we, as much as I wholeheartedly agree that we should have interpreters literally in every case type, if we don't do it in a measured, rational, appropriate way, we stand much criticism if we just say we're going to spend this money and we don't know how much it means, how much it's going to cost us. And really, we run the risk of creating harm when one party comes to court and one day they have an interpreter because we have the money, and the next time they come to court, they don't because we ran out of money because we didn't figure out how much we actually need. And so I strongly support the concept of sending it to SEAC first to do it in a rational basis, that we have a strong foundation to support continued growth in the use of the interpreter money appropriately, efficiently, and in a broad spectrum way that can last.
Thank you. Kirk Child and then Judge Hicks.
Just a couple of reminders that initially when the council was looking at this issue, and I think had it originally boiled up from the court executives and the conversation, was to put together the ad hoc committee to sort out primarily to look at getting what is now that $13 million out as quickly as possible. The other part, remember, is that the U.S. Department of Justice has been looking closely at this issue with us, and we've been working very, very closely with them on sort of this rollout approach. And while they believe we ought to be at providing interpreters in all case types, in all proceedings, and in the hallway, as well, that they understand that that's not realistic. And so I think they're supportive of an approach where we can get to a bit of a rollout here. What has been high on their list is the surplus that the, you know, that we've been accruing a surplus when they believe that the need is much broader, which it is. And then using that to get some data that we can use to support what will be the additional costs. I think Mike or John's exactly right that this is going to be a concern that we have to have, the administration will have to have, on what are the costs on rolling out. So there is, I think, a sense that we would want to try and do this quickly, which shouldn't mean we shouldn't do it thoughtfully on it, but it is a one-time fund, and I think it's got our friends, the Department of Justice, supporting this gradual rollout approach.
Judge Hicks.
I'm not clear on what we're referring to SEAC. Is it to determine the allocation or the implementation? Because 99% of what I'm hearing is talking about the implementation, and I understood all this was to recommend an allocation.
Well, you're correct on both sides. The charge and the recommendation that Judge Good has brought to us is a methodology for allocation or of the money. But a side conversation that's developed in that work was
an analysis of the implementation of it. And that's what I suggested, perhaps if there is a concern about the proposed implementation of expansion, that we refer that to SEAC if they're willing to take it. And they have that discussion, since they seem to me to be the appropriate people to have a discussion about implementation of a new program. So we kind of have two things going on.
Does that stop us from making the recommendation on the allocation?
I don't think it does. My only question was, do we need to, and certainly when this is presented to the council, we can explain to the council that we've had this discussion and that we did ask SEAC to take a look at it. My only thought is, do we need to, the recommendation that's coming to us on page 48 of the materials, do we need to add anything to ask the council to hold off on the reimbursement requests until SEAC has determined whether or not they are going to make a recommendation?
General?
Yes.
David. So I think for the courts to understand what the allocation is going to be to each of them will help form the recommendation. Without that information, it becomes very, very difficult. So I think that the proposed allocation methodology be taken up by this committee and followed up by further review by SEAC to determine the implementation aspect of it.
My only question before we vote on that is that something that should be amended in this recommendation to add that piece, the review piece by SEAC, and then we vote on that? So could that be a friendly amendment?
Well, we don't have a motion yet.
Well, we do have, I think we could do it either way, or we could handle it. We could do it that way, or we could handle it as two separate motions. I think Judge Wesley has made a motion that the issue of how to implement the expansion be referred to SEAC, and I believe Judge Slough seconded that. If we want to vote on that and then handle the allocation motion separately, I want to see if Donna has any concerns about that.
I don't have any concerns about whether you package them together as a single one or do it separately. I do want to say that the council was obviously very interested in the input of all of the various subject matter advisory committees, the presiding judges, and the court executives in formulating the recommendations, and that's why the ad hoc working group was not, it wasn't a recommendation that came out of the court interpreters advisory panel. It was, the ad hoc working group was created with members from this group, or a member from this group, presiding judges, advisory committee, court executives advisory committee, civil and small claims, family and juvenile, probate and mental health, so they could get the best input from all of those groups in coming to the recommendation, because they realized that what they were looking at was really something that was incredibly multidisciplinary, and that coming from a single location would not have provided them the best information. So I expect there's some thought that because of the formation of the ad hoc working group that provided the recommendation to the council, I would expect there's some feeling like the questions of implementation have sort of been dealt with in the ad hoc working group. But certainly, the council has never been reluctant to hear from folks on items that they want to reconsider and want to recommend that the council take another look at.
And I think that's appropriate, and I think that SEAC probably will consider that. But I also think when it comes down to the experts that have to implement the program, if they have some concerns, they should tell the council they have some concerns. Maybe at the end of it they don't. But if they do, I think the council should be fully informed. So I have a motion to refer to SEAC the issue of whether or not a discussion on the implementation of the expansion of these services. And I have a second. Is there any other discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that motion carries. Is there a motion to approve the recommendation of Judge Good's group, which is laid out in four items on page 48?
So moved.
Judge Clay?
Second.
Judge Hicks on the second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Motion's approved. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for that good discussion. Before I move on, I just want to